Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the A24 project here on the Nerd Party. On today's shows, we'll be discussing the next two films released by A24, which are Barely Lethal and Slow West. I'm your co-host, Dallas King, and with me in the A24 pod booth, as always, is Lee Hutchison. How are you this week?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one. This is two first-time watches for me. I don't know what it's like for the listeners, so I was very curious to dive into these movies, and I'm going to be interested to see if your opinions line up with mine.
Ooh, teasing your opinions there. But before we dive into that, we've got this fortnight's A24-hour news. But there's just time to plug our latest competition, which could see you win an awesome Hereditary Hail Payment tee from the great team at Last Exit to Nowhere. So to be in with a chance of winning, all you have to do is head over to iTunes and leave the A24 project a written review. Now don't worry if you've already left one in the past, because all reviews will be going into the pot to pick a winner, and you've got until the next episode on the 25th of March to enter. Now, since I've mentioned Hereditary, it would be wrong of me to not mention our special interview special with Millie Shapiro and Lee that is currently available now. Lee, do you want to, if people haven't already listened to it, why should they?
Yeah, you should listen to it, because Hereditary was one of the most exciting films of last year. And I think when you think of A24, you think of some amazing kind of characters that they've had over their, you know, 70 plus movies, if not more, that they've done released already. And Charlie from Hereditary is one of the most kind of iconic. So it was really interesting to talk about what that was like for a young actress to get involved in that kind of project, working with someone like Toni Collette, that scene, and so much more. So it was really well worth talking, and it hopefully won't be our first and last A24 interview, let alone maybe this episode.
Well, indeed, you're another little tease there, but we'll get on to that in a little bit, because first on my news reporting is a quick awards roundup. It will have not passed anyone by who is a fan of A24 films that we recently had the Oscars, and sadly it was not a great night for A24, and they missed out on the few that they were nominated for, the biggest one being Paul Schrader's first ever Oscar nomination. The guy wrote Taxi Driver. What's that about? And, you know, he lost out. I'm going to have to try and find out what he lost out on back then. But sadly, he missed. I was going to find out what he got passed over in terms for Taxi Driver, but yes, no, sadly it went to Green Book for Best Original Screenplay, which I think we discussed last week on Filibuster, that it was basically at the bottom of our pile. Any other film in that category would have been a worthy winner, except this one. But it did fashion us with a great quote. I don't know if you saw this, but Paul Schrader was on Facebook recently saying that he'd been put in Facebook jail by A24 after some comments about wanting to work with Kevin Spacey. And he was put in Facebook jail for the remainder of the award season, so he didn't say anything else too extreme. But he came back on and he did give us this quote. He said, you know, he was slightly disappointed, but he's learned anew never to underestimate the power of mediocrity, which I think sums up the Oscars perfectly for this year anyway.
I highly recommend, if you take anything away from this episode, it's not the competition, it's not our insightful reviews on these A24 movies, it's that you should be following Paul Schrader on Facebook. He has the most interesting kind of, you, it's the kind of old man shouting at the kind of cloud style sort of feed. It's well worth checking out.
Yeah, I think the two social media highlights, I think, of this award season have been, on one hand, Richard E. Grant loving every single moment of it, and then Paul Schrader's rather cynical take on it all. So yeah, no, I thought that was great. But it's safe to say that A24 had a much better night the night before at the Film Independent Spirit Awards, where the A24 were big winners for Ethan Hawke, won Best Actor for First Reformed, and Bo Burnham won First Screenplay for Eighth Grade. Worthy winners, you think?
Yeah, certainly in the categories that I've seen the films in, I think A24 deserved more from the year. We kind of kept coming back to Toni Collette should have been at least nominated for her performance in Hereditary. Eighth Grade, I have to take it from everyone that's seen it but me that it is well worth seeing, and that it has a fantastic script. So it was a really kind of good spread of wins there. But I think, you know, 2019 could be maybe its year that it maybe has more Oscar success. It's a disappointing one that you know, I think there's a lot of films can take grievance with lack of nominations, even lack of wins, and First Reformed is certainly one of them. To be nominated, you would think, oh, it's maybe for Ethan Hawke. No, it got the script, which is completely fair, and great to see that a movie like that's been recognised. But a film like that did deserve a lot more. It deserved some of the bigger categories, and it seems like this a lot for, and the same for a few other A24 films last year too.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have certainly put Ethan Hawke in the fifth spot for Best Actor above Viggo Mortensen, and you know, given the that there was only eight films, if it had gone up to 10, I think First Reform would have been a worthy recipient of one of the final spots. But you know, you're saying looking ahead to next year, and we can probably give some weight to potential films which may show up at the end of year awards next year, because we're just back from the Glasgow Film Festival, and A24 had a very strong showing in Glasgow this year with screenings of Mid-90s, Under the Silver Lake, Hole in the Ground, Eighth Grade, and the surprise film, which wasn't as pretty much everyone on Twitter was either speculating or just basically hoping that it was going to be High Life, but instead you got Gloria Bell, and you were there for that one. What did you make of the swing and a miss and the sort of last minute curveball by A24 there?
Yeah, I managed to, apart from Eighth Grade and A Hole in the Ground, which is kind of now out in cinemas, so I didn't really bother going to see it at the film festival. I had kind of caught all the other A24 films, the mid-90s, Under the Silver Lake, and Gloria Bell, I never sort of considered it. I was looking forward to it based on the trailer, and I kind of never considered it would be the film, because it's not out till, I think it's about June time in the UK. So when the film starts and a bit, it's got a bit of an overture at the beginning, I'm like, Film Nation, okay, I'm not sure what this could be here. And then when it kind of kicks in with Sebastian Lelio, who kind of did the original take of sort of Gloria Bell, he did a fantastic woman, Disobedience. Disobedience is now actually available on Amazon Prime. I was really quite pleased with this. I really wanted High Life, but Gloria Bell's a really enjoyable film, and I think it's one that's definitely going to find an audience, especially probably an older audience, and I don't mean that in a kind of negative way. It's very much aimed at that kind of older crowd that I've loved and lost and learned to kind of love again. But it's definitely well worth checking out. It was an enjoyable treat. It may not have been the film I was hoping for, but it was a film that I was still pleased to get.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought that, I didn't think it was going to be High Life, I have to say. I actually thought they were going to throw a curveball and maybe go with something a bit mainstream, but something that potentially maybe needed positive buzz. And I thought it was actually going to be Hellboy. I don't know why. I just had it in my head that, you know, it's coming out sort of early April. I thought, well, we could maybe get that. But it wasn't. But like you say, I mean, you'll have to wait to for another couple of months to see High Life. As yet again, if any, you know, long listeners of the A24 Project know Lee's tortured saga in trying to see Eighth Grade, you know, I was able to go and see it. And I have to say, it kind of lived up to the hype. You know, I think we're going to have, if you head over to our latest issue of Filibuster, you'll get a full rundown of our full thoughts on the films we saw at Glasgow Film Festival, including all the A24 ones. And, you know, of course, as we go through the project, we'll deep dive into those ones there. But, you know, not only did we get to see Eighth Grade, I was actually lucky enough to go on my first red carpet and spend a few minutes with the incredibly tall Bo Burnham. I was very surprised when he came out of the car just how tall this guy is. I mean, I'd seen his stand-up, I just didn't realise. I mean, this guy is probably sort of 6'4", 6'5", and it was slightly intimidating, but a lovely chap. Spent a couple of minutes sort of chatting away about the film, and I think, Lee, would you like to listen to that interview now?
Yeah, let's get it on.
Hi, hey. Tell us the A24 Project.
Hey.
How does it feel to have the film sort of come to international audiences and have sort of different age ranges and generations accept the film and embrace the film? Because, you know, the technology, they may not be so familiar with it, but it's the struggles and experiences seem to be quite universal.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, all we want is for people to connect with the film and see the film. So the fact that we're here with, you know, the little weird film we made, you know, a year and a half ago in upstate New York with a bunch of eighth graders is incredible. So We just hope people can continue to connect with it. It's just like a privilege. It's sort of surreal.
Yeah, and in your stand-up, which is sort of related to this, you mentioned about always the need to perform on social media. How do you think, this film will help people sort of learn that they need to sort of balance the online and offline sides of their personality?
Yeah, you know, the film really isn't trying to instruct people on what to do or how to feel. Like, hopefully, you know, things like that, you know, it can hopefully inspire a conversation to have about that, but I didn't want the film to sort of finger wag or tell you what to do, or I think there's a little too much commentary on the internet and not enough just portrayal of how it feels. So the film really is just trying to sort of portray the subjective experience of what it means for this person to be online. And then if you want to draw your own conclusions based on that, that's great. But, the film, I don't want the film to have that conversation for you.
Absolutely. And finally, you've said that you'd like to work with LC again. Could we potentially see a like Before Sunrise style trilogy where we revisit her in 12th grade or college, sophomore year?
The truth is she's like a kid and I want to let her live her life. You know, I don't want to like immediately have her thinking about the next film she's in. And then, or you get the boyhood effect where then like the kid becomes a photographer because they were on set so much they of course developed an interest in photography. You know what I mean? Like, so I got to like let her like live her life. And then, you know, in 4 years we'll check back in. If we want to do something, we'll do it. But the kid deserves some space.
Great. Thanks very much.
Take it easy.
So that was Bo Burnham there at Glasgow Film Festival. Thanks again to Bo for taking the time to talk to us. And, you know, it's only going to be about another month before Lee will finally get to see if 8th grade lives up to all that hype. Is it still needling at you that you still can't do it? How was Hamilton, though? Because that's what you saw instead.
I was down in London to see Spurs versus Arsenal and Hamilton. So yeah, it was, I can deal with that. Like at one point we went into sort of Picture House Central to grab a drink. Like I'm a Picture House member and I get like 20% off drinks. So I was like, come on, let's go in there. Let's get some drinks. And then I was in there and I turned around at one point and like they had like four TVs all playing the 8th grade trailer. And I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. It's just like there's no escape from this 8th grade wait. But all I can say now is I will finally see it next month. So we're getting closer for sure. But I really enjoyed your interview with Bo Burnham. And I got to listen to it. You'd emailed it over to me and I was sitting on the tarmac waiting to fly off, just in the kind of holding position. And I had like, I've got a couple minutes before this flies off. And I managed to squeeze in a listen of it. So it was a job well done and some really exciting questions that have got me even more excited for the film.
Absolutely. And another thing that we always get on the A24 project now, we always sort of record it a few days in advance of it going out, and we always seem to find out that a trailer drops or there's a huge piece of news just after we've finished filming. But A24 are now almost taunting us in announcing that things will come out just after we've recorded them. And Ari Aster's follow-up film to Hereditary, Midsommar, the first trailer is dropping literally like the day after we are recording this now. We've seen a couple of little snippets of artwork there. With the poster's been released. This is a film which stars Florence Pugh and Jack Rayner. And for all, it's another film which is kind of being told it's going to be in the horror vibe. It's certainly got a sort of Wicker Man-esque sort of name and something like that. So not entirely sure what to expect, but we'll be reviewing that trailer on the next episode and seeing if it looks like he was a one-hit wonder with Hereditary or whether he's the real deal. Are you looking forward to that one?
Yeah, I'm getting the Wicker Man vibes from sort of the little footage that we've seen so far. And yeah, I'm really curious to see what this trailer is going to be when it kind of drops tomorrow. They've managed to keep this film very shrouded in mystery, even probably more so than sort of Hereditary at this point. So it's going to be interesting to see what this surprise is. And I suspect it'll probably be worth the wait for that too.
I mean, if it's anything like the Hereditary trailer, I mean, we can't really go off the what the trailer and the marketing materials are, because, you know, not to get into spoilers, but basically, they did a very good job of wrong-footing the entire audience of what Hereditary was about in the end. So hopefully they're gonna continue with the excellent marketing for that. But we do have two films to talk about this week, and first up is Barely Lethal. And now this is a film which you have to be very careful when searching for on the internet in case of any spelling errors or predictive text. But secondly, it is a film written by John Darko and directed by Kyle Newman, who directed the Star Wars sort of spoof comedy Fanboys back in 2009. Now, this film sees a teenage special ops agent coveting a normal adolescence, and she fakes her own death and enrolls in a suburban high school, but she quickly learns that surviving the treacherous waters of high school is more challenging than the international espionage world. So, Lee, you said this was your first watch of this film. What was your take on it?
I remember kind of like a good few months ago before we started the A24 project, I went through Netflix and like typed in all the A24 movies that I could find on the UK Netflix, and there wasn't that many, but barely Lethal was there, so I kind of added it to my list, and it's been sort of in the back of my mind that, oh, this is an A24 movie that I've never seen the trailer for, I don't really know anything about, I like Hayley Steinfeld, it could be an interesting kind of watch. And it was a movie that when you think of A24, you think of, you know, so many kind of diverse films, and you think, why have I not kind of heard about this one? And that sometimes can be a bit of an issue for A24 movies that I've found, where the, you know, there's little buzz about it, the Letterboxd is maybe kind of a couple of people I know have seen it, and this film kind of came under that category. And you think of some of the amazing talent that A24's had produced their films for, you know, you think of the Greta Gerwigs, the Paul Schraders, Sofia Coppola, you know, so many to you know, just to kind of name even three there. I never realized that Brett Ratner, of all people, a pretty despicable human being based on some of his comments in the past year, had actually produced an A24 film. And so he had that Barely Lethal, which, you know, is a quite cringeworthy play on, obviously, Barely Legal. The film really was an absolute mess. I was kind of lying in bed on a Friday night, just like, oh, come on, I'll just show on the laptop, kind of get going, I'm going to have a busy next couple of weeks at the Glasgow Film Festival, and this film absolutely killed my Friday night mood. I was just sitting there with like a cold drink watching this movie on the laptop, and it was just a mess. I really like Hayley Steinfeld, but this film was just terrible. It felt like, you know, a straight to DVD kind of film. It wasn't very good at all, and it was a real mess considering the talent involved. Hayley Steinfeld, I love in movies like Edge of 17, you know, I thought she was fantastic. And Bumblebee, you have Sophie Turner, and you have Jessica Alba, which is kind of good to see her still kind of working, and Samuel L. Jackson, of all people. And then you kind of get this movie, and it's like, who is this aimed at? Like, I can't imagine young women watching this movie. I'm not certainly aiming to say that I'm speaking on behalf of young women here, but I can't imagine a young female audience watching this. I can't imagine the sort of audience that perhaps watched Kingsman, of either sex or gender, watching something like this. I can't imagine many adults diving into this kind of movie. I'm really not too sure who this movie's for, and it certainly wasn't for me.
I think I can't say I was disappointed, because I didn't really have any high expectations going in. I, like you, hadn't really heard of it beforehand. It was one which I think was kind of circling around on Netflix for a while. I'd maybe seen it like under a list of, I don't know, action comedies or something like that, and you know, it was like, oh look, there's a title which, you know, is, oh, it's like Barely Legal. And yeah, I mean, Hayley Steinfeld, I think, yeah, she's got charisma to spare, and you know, she really puts her heart and soul into it, but just the material's not there to back her up, unfortunately. I get Sophie Turner, I think, you know, she has potential, but she deserves a lot better than what she's given. Jessica Alba is, for me, just awful and no sort of credible threat whatsoever as the villain of the piece. And I can't really remember a film where she's ever made a sort of lasting, memorable impression beyond maybe the first Sin City, or actually Idle Hands. If you've ever seen Idle Hands, I think she was in that. And Samuel Jackson, as a sort of Nick Fury M type sort of person, he's just sort of sleepwalking through this one and not really putting in any of the sort of effort that you would normally hope to see with one of his roles. I mean, it's sort of a weird sort of mashup of like the teenage Bourne identity of Jason Bourne had decided to enroll in high school instead of hunting down anyone who'd ever wronged him from this organization. And I mean, it sort of brings me out to me, the sort of action is sort of not very good. It's not very well choreographed and stuff like that. It's certainly not very memorable. But then it sort of struggles to find its place. Is it an action film, or is it a high school coming of age movie? And this is just going to bring me on to like another rant. I know I did like one like filibuster last week about the preferential voting system of the Oscars, but it's why young kids who are in high school these days still use John Hughes films as their point of reference for what's going on in high school. This is like 30 years ago, you know. It's fair enough, it was valid for me when I was going through, well, I say high school, secondary school, but, you know, in the UK. But, you know, this is also specifically aimed at something like To All the Boys I've Loved Before, which was on Netflix, and it basically talked about the Breakfast Club all the time and stuff like that, where I thought, well, shouldn't actually these kids be referencing films which are more from of their age range, such as, and this is actually one point that Barely Lethal does score points on, that it actually does reference 10 Things I Hate About You and Mean Girls and stuff like that. And, you know, because John Hughes films are of a time and place, you know, they're actually quite sexist, misogynistic, and, you know, also in the world of social media, which, you know, not to talk about eighth grade too much, but eighth grade totally captures what high school is or middle school is going to be like for kids having to go through it, you know, with social media. And I think there's probably not anyone who was my age watching that eighth grade at Glasgow Film Festival who thought, wasn't thinking, I'm so glad that we didn't have social media back in my day, because it would have made school just a hell of a lot worse. And I think the problem is when you have a film referencing classics like The Breakfast Club, and I say Mean Girls as a classic, because in that high school sort of film, I think Mean Girls is a classic. If your film is not as good or better than that film, immediately people will have poor comparisons for it. And I think that is what it suffered from.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can see that there's definitely an inspiration there. And it's just, it just completely fails in every respect. It's not a good action movie. It's not a good teen comedy. It's not a good romance. It's nothing at all. And, you know, I have no problems with movies that switch genres. I find them quite interesting sometimes to watch. But this one just completely fails. There's no strength to the film. At the beginning, it's kind of interesting when you see these young girls. I don't know how many times I said young there, that are sitting there like learning to drive cars. You know, that's kind of funny. But then it almost throws away the sort of secret agent gimmick within like 10, 15 minutes, and it just becomes sort of a high school teen comedy, and it completely fails at that before sort of doubling back towards the end. It just doesn't work at all.
No, I think the problem was it never really found exactly what it wanted to be, because, yeah, the beginning of it is, I think you mentioned Kingsman before, and it's probably a good sort of reference point of, you know, getting these young sort of school kids trained up to be spies and stuff like this. But with this one, it's actually, it's not sort of like they were in their teens and stuff like that. These are like younger, probably like 7 or 8 being programmed to become assassins and stuff like that. But yeah, it just never really sort of lands on the tone of what it wants to be. And I think that's probably its biggest failure, I think.
Yeah, it was a real disappointment. And it's a shame that of the kind of few A24 films that people can find on the UK Netflix, that this one has somehow made the cut.
Yeah, no, I think sort of looking back, you know, there's been some that we weren't that keen on, sort of Revenge of the Green Dragons and Cutbank, but I think this one in particular feels out of place in keeping with the rest of what we've seen so far. Would you agree this is probably the most sort of mainstreamy, what Hollywood would try to produce but ultimately not really deliver on, sort of thing, which is why it kind of feels tonally out of place with what A24 have done before and since, I think.
Yeah, I've had the exact same feeling when I watched it, and I got the feeling that, I know we've touched on it a few times, that we are entering this golden age apparently, and I still think we're far away from that. I think it's at this stage where there's such a dip in quality between some of the movies, and I think the past 3 or so episodes that we've done, it's been almost like the first episode is the first movie we review is like a kind of 1-star or kind of pretty mediocre at best film, and then it wildly switches to something like The Most Violent Year, While You're Young, and then kind of into The Slow West, where it's like 2 completely different qualities of films. And that consistency that we get with A24 perhaps in sort of the past couple years, and kind of probably in the current year, you know, you get the odd perhaps kind of poor movie, thinking of something like The Children Act, But then, for the most part, you get A24 and you think, right, it's pretty much going to be a guaranteed really good movie here. We're still in that stage where it's just a little bit all over the place, and that kind of movie, this one, just sticks out in quite a few ways, and it's definitely near the bottom for me.
Yeah, so I think we'll leave it there. I think it's quite clear on our thoughts on Barely Lethal, but hopefully we have a bit of an upward or westward trajectory with the next film, and that is Slow West. And Slow West is, I'm gonna read a review that I wrote for the Evening Express, the local paper I did when I did it at the Belmont, and it allows me to basically use my cheap gag from the end of the previous A24 project where I did the Pet Shop Boys. So it was a Slow West. Life's not peaceful there, Slow West. In the open air, Slow West. From Scotland to the States, Slow West. That vast bender's great. And there's a first time for everything, indeed, using Pet Shop Boy lyrics in the skull. And Slow West, it marks the feature film debut of John McClane. No, not the main character from Die Hard. This John McClane is one of the founding members of the Beta Band, and his short film Pitch Black Heist is also an award-winning filmmaker. McClane wrote and directed this story of a young Scottish aristocrat called Cavendish, who travels to the lawless American West in search of the girl he loves. Taken under the wing of a mysterious stranger, Michael Fassbender, they set out to reach the girl and her father before a myriad of bounty hunters also are looking for them. Beautifully shot by Robbie Ryan, it captures the bleakness and emptiness of life in this harsh, unforgiving time and place, one that consistently threatens to crush Cavendish's innocence. McClane keeps a rich vein of black humour flowing throughout that has seen critics use the word Coen-esque in their reviews. Like the Coens, McClane has shown true grit in creating a modern classic once upon a time in the West. So that was what I thought of it about 3 years ago when it first came out. What were your first thoughts when you saw it?
Yeah, I kind of caught it fresh this morning, and I'd just come back from London. I've had no time in the past few weeks with the film festival to watch anything other than film festival releases. So I caught it this morning, and I must admit I watched it on a computer during breaks at work. So because I had a nice runtime of 84 minutes, which was a perfect sweet spot to cram it in before a 5 p.m. podcast recording. And I was really surprised because I'd heard about this movie and I was keen to check it out, but I had no idea what it was about apart from it had Michael Fassbender and it was a Western. And I was really quite surprised to sort of see the Scottish connections with the movie. And I thought it was such a simple story told well. Like, it is just 84 minutes and it is an adventure about them going out west and encountering some troubles along the way. It's almost sort of the, you know, a slimmed down version almost away of something like The Revenant. And I just think it's one of these ones where I've always thought with some longer films and certain, you know, probably a lot of films, people have a strong beginning, strong ending, but they don't really know how to kind of stitch that middle together. And I think this movie does that really well. It has an interesting execution, and then it kind of ends on a really exciting beat. You can almost visualize that the director, John McClane, he's sitting there, he's got it kind of script in his head how it's going to end, but how do we get there? How do we get across those plains? And I enjoy the sort of the people that they encounter along the way. There's some really cracking dialogue in that middle section. I was really surprised, and I just genuinely really enjoyed it. It was a really pleasant surprise, and it was actually, I have a little like private list on Letterboxd where I add in all the A24 movies as I see them or I have seen them, and this was my 50th A24 movie I've seen, and it was certainly in the kind of the, you know, the upper tier of those films.
Yeah, no, it's, I've got a similar list, but I'm just adding them in as we do the rewatch, and I think this is probably in my top five so far. I'd forgotten how good it was, and to think that this is his debut feature, it is very, very accomplished. He's as a writer director as well. I thought the script it's very lean. I mean, like you say, this is just 84 minutes and it sort of cracks along at a great pace. It's, I can see the sort of comparisons to the Coens because it's got lots of great entertaining sort of supporting characters who pop up here and there. It's got like little episodes similar to like almost like Buster Scruggs, in that, you know, each sort of stage along the journey, they encounter a different person and you get a little bit of stuff. You had like a Werner, the German sort of guy who was traveling west, and he sort of meets this guy and he seems like a nice guy, but basically turns out you cannot trust anyone in the West. And, you know, it's great. You've got, I mean, it's great to see Ben Mendelsohn turn up because Ben Mendelsohn is always value for me in any, so especially in supporting roles. I think he's just fantastic. And it was great to see him. You got the Hound, Rory McCann, or as us from Scotland probably know him better, the Scottish, the Porridge Oats man from before his time on Game of Thrones. And it was just great to see. And I think it's just a really comes film. I thought that it looked fantastic. The soundtrack was great. And, you know, like it ends it's called Slow West. It's a very sort of slow build, so to speak, even though it's 84 minutes, but ends in a crescendo of violence, which is very well executed. Although there were some great things on, I mean, we can go into slights. Shall we go into spoilers on here? We're allowed to. Let's go for it. I was looking at IMDb, always look at the trivia to find any interesting facts on these films that are worth talking about. And someone's basically gone, and it's not really trivia, it's just an overstatement of fact. And this is what someone's basically done is trivia and wants to say. So when Jay, as played by Cody Smith McPhee, who does an all right Scottish accent, I think it has good moments and bad moments in it. And Michael Fassbender is just playing an Irish person, so he just gets to keep his natural accent, so that's fine. It says, when Jay busts in on Rose during the climactic shootout, the first thing she does is shoot him in the heart, literally, but also figuratively as well, considering she doesn't even recognise him at first. Moments later, Katori, the Indian, kisses her, and then a stray bullet busts open a salt container that spills down onto the bloodied and dying Jay, literally, but also figuratively, throwing salt in the fresh wounds at the sight of Rose loving someone else. And I'm like, you didn't need to write that down on IMDb trivia. It's like, yeah, we get it. It's like, in case you didn't realise, this is what the filmmaker's going at. Like, yeah, no, we got that. And then the other one was, during the climactic shootout, Silas, Michael Fassbender's character, is shot in the shoulder and then in the leg. In the final scene, he's shown to have an impairment at these two appendages. His new life has literally cost him an arm and a leg. And I'm like going, ah. It's like, yeah, I got that from watching the film. You didn't need, it's people who go into all these details afterwards going, I think you'll find the filmmaker that it is. Yeah, we get it. It's on the screen. We didn't need you to tell me this. It's like someone is mansplaining this film on IMDb. It's just...
Oh. I saw the same trivia as well. I think it comes under the spoiler section as well.
Yeah, it's a spoiler because it does go into the ending, but it's like, come on, guys. I mean, really?
Exactly. It's just one of those ones that I think of it. The Garth Marenghi quote where it's like, I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards.
So unfortunately, yeah, if you haven't seen Slow West, we've kind of spoiled it for you. I probably should have said to pause it here and then watch The West and then come. It'll only take you 84 minutes and then come back and continue the rest. But, you know, you might have already watched it. You know, if you're keeping track with us, you may be watching these films in advance to then see and join in the conversation with us. So, yeah. But, yeah, no. So any sort of final thoughts on Slow West?
I really enjoyed it and I'm quite keen to watch it again. It's one of those ones that I always think of it, like it's kind of come fresh from sort of the film festival experience where we're so used to films being so long, you know, 2 hours, 2 hours plus. It's really nice sometimes to get a movie like this where it's 84 minutes and you can just sort of settle into it. And it's been, you know, I thought this was a real kind of treat of a movie that it just kept it simple and told a really good story well. And I think with this runtime, if it was a bit longer, I would think, oh, you know what, I've watched it already. It, you know, I caught it on the computer, obviously it's not ideal, but hey. But with it being this sort of runtime, I'm like, yeah, I'll catch this again. I'll watch this on the TV. I've got like 36 more hours left in my Amazon rental of this movie. I'm gonna crack it open again.
Yeah, no, and I mean, the only real disappointment I have at the moment is sort of looking on IMDb and seeing that there's nothing in production for John McClane, and that, you know, this was his first feature film and he hasn't done anything since. Maybe he's too busy with his music to commit. But, you know, on the promise of this and his short films, which won a BAFTA and they both starred Michael Fassbender, so he's got a great relationship with him there. You know, I'm really keen to see what he does next, and hopefully it's not too long before he's back on our screens, whether it's on the big screen or the small screen, if, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole Netflix streaming sort of debate. If you want that at the moment, you can listen to Nerd Nuptial, where Tristan and the girl have a great debate on that at the moment. But yeah, so we'll leave it there for this episode. We're going to be back in 2 weeks' time, and we're going to be looking at Amy, the BAFTA and Oscar-winning documentary about Amy Winehouse, and then The End of the Tour, which looks at the book tour of David Foster Wallace and stars Jesse Eisenberg and Jason Segel. But for in the meantime, if people want to talk about A24, or just if they want to tell you that they've seen Eighth Grade and you haven't, where would they be able to find you, Lee?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. And I must also say I am impressed by our listeners that we get this kind of boring, you see this boring data on iTunes where the more listeners we get and subscribers or whatever, we get an idea of the type of podcast they listen to. And, you know, they listen to the A24 Chore, another A24 podcast, the A24 official podcast, and like things like Slow Burn and the Joe Rogan Experience. And now I'm very excited that many of our listeners also listen to a Zodiac podcast. So I also love the movie Zodiac, and I feel that I've got now a special bond with our listeners who, and I will now check out this podcast that our listeners are also checking out too. So thank you very much to everyone that listens, and for having pretty awesome taste.
Yeah, no, Zodiac for me is one of the best films of the last, I'm gonna have to say 12 years, because I think it was 2007. I don't know if anyone follows me on Twitter at Champ Celluloid, that's where you can find me there. And the Academy put up a post saying, can you tell what this film is? And it was a still from Zodiac, and I basically retweeted it with oh, that would be the film Zodiac, the film that you egregiously did not nominate for a single Academy Award, you buffoons. So I was very shocked that film should have won pretty much every single award going that year, I thought. I thought it was just an absolutely astounding piece of filmmaking by David Fincher. But sadly, we can't really go into that too much just now because it's not distributed by A24. So we'll see you on the next episode. But as always, you can check us out on Filibuster every week, and also some other great shows on the Nerd Party, including Nerd Nuptial, Missing Frames, Aggressive Negotiation, City Alpha 3, Punch It, and Of Time and Space. So until next time, we'll just see you later. Bye bye.